Awesome. Welcome to Chad Watch,
What's
episode
up?
one. My name is Chris Silva. This is Kyle Miller. I'm sorry, you could have definitely introduced yourself. But yeah, welcome everybody, and thanks for watching the first episode of Chad Watch, which is relatively self-explanatory, but it's going to be an opportunity for us to talk about these Chads and all of the offensive things that they do in our industry, and more importantly, what we can do to support the people who aren't a bunch of chads and are doing things the right way. So thank you very much, and we'll get going. I guess the way we're going to structure this show is every show we're going to start off with a little bit of news and kind of work into our guest and the topic of our show. This week it's just me and Kyle kind of doing like the setup, who we are, why we're into this idea, and the birth of Chad. So yeah, I guess I'll kick us off with a little bit of a news update. I think a couple pretty interesting things going on is the MRA, or I guess now the CRA, the Cannabis Regulation Agency, regulatory
Props to the
agency.
state for doing that, actually,
Yeah,
the
for sure.
rename. Whether you agree with the merging of the hemp industry, that's a different topic. But just addressing it as cannabis instead of marijuana, I
With
think
an
is,
H.
yeah, oh, especially with an H,
Yeah,
but
for sure.
addressing it as cannabis because it is cannabis scientifically, I think that's a great move on our part.
No, I think so too, man. I also just think one of the things that we'll talk about in this news update is it kind of hits on the fact that these regulatory agencies are going to soon be regulating products that are getting more commingled. There's a lot
Absolutely.
of, yeah, there's a lot of people talking about the conversion oil, converting Delta 8 into Delta 9. And so this is kind of
Sure.
somewhere where you have a product that's transitioning from one regulatory agency, or in the past, one regulatory agency, MDARD, into the new regulatory agency. So I think this is probably a sign of a lot of things to come, that a lot of these things that used to be separate regulatory agencies will be brought in under more just under a more centralized, efficient bureaucracy. That kind of makes sense, you know?
Yeah, and as we talk about conversion oil, for example, and the hemp part to it, I think one of the biggest pressing questions is where exactly all of that comes from. Hemp, obviously, being legalized nationwide, production taking place all over the country, does this conversion oil thing mean that we get influxed with just a bunch of hemp from out west? What does that do, and how specifically does it impact the people here in Michigan who've been producing hemp, or and conversely, the guys that are growing outdoor for biomass and things like that? So definitely lots of conversation to have on that topic specifically.
For sure, man. I think, and it's just a spoiler alert for everybody. We're going to do an episode about conversion oil and what it can mean for the market, and who benefits, who wins, the winners, proverbial winners and losers, and all of that. So yeah, it's really interesting. So that aspect is just something newsworthy, is that this agency has been merged. One of the things that they did recently is they released new rules for micro businesses that, oh, well, I guess it would open up a new micro business class. And that's something that
Class
they're
A
already,
micro
Class
business.
A micro business, right? And they're already getting a lot of pushback from the MCMA, the Michigan Cannabis Manufacturers Association. For anybody completely new, these would be like some of the largest producers. Not all of the members are known because of the, in my opinion, scumbag stuff they do, right? So like this association is obviously very against this. And so this is one of the things that we'll also be talking about. But it is an important thing for people who are caregivers and legacy operators to know that the micro business is much more attractive now. It's opened up to 300 plant count. And then you could buy processing from the regulated market. You would be barred from doing your own. So this is a great, in my opinion, something really good for the legacy market. This has happened recently. And then also last week, they took public comment on the idea of basically transparency labels for remediation on cannabis flower.
Ah.
And so one of the things that I think is really interesting on that is there was a Chad gentleman there from Willow International, which y'all should Google this one. Willow International makes a machine called the Willow, and it's used for remediation on cannabis flower. And this is basically like the 100% the culprit on on who we're talking about for remediation. And this guy stands up and says, hey, listen, you guys are viewing this remediation label as like some sort of like bad thing, like a warning label, right? When you should be viewing it as, hey, this is a sterilized, 100% clean, like a consumable thing, just like food, which is crazy to me because nobody's smoking weed because it's sterile. They're doing it for the terps and the cannabinoids, you know?
Exactly.
So it just kind of shows like how out of touch these folks are. But the reality is if we don't have the label or anything about it, like it's a component of the market that's not even talked about. Like I'm convinced that many consumers are buying remediated trash, in my opinion, and they're buying it at close to full market price or full market price. And they don't know any better. Like no one's telling them that. No one, it's possible that the bud tenders don't even know if they don't have the metric back end on it, you know?
Sure. And that's the interesting point to it is passing it off as something that's, you know, quote unquote, exotic and selling it at a premium rate. Now, the remediation and the process, I don't think it, you know, it doesn't make it bad weed in the sense that it could physically harm you. But we're talking about transparency in the sense that people just need to know. It's not that people, you know, we advocate that nobody should be able to consume that.
Yeah, it shouldn't
that.
Be illegal. You know,
sure,
yeah.
Should, it, exactly. And you know, if folks want to spend their money on that and economy tier shoppers want to purchase that, that's totally fine as long as they know that and they're informed of that. And, you know, it's not passed off as something far superior.
Yeah, no, for sure.
In
so,
my opinion.
You're preaching to the choir, my man. You know, that's 100% where I am. I'm convinced that the consumers, like, I mean, people in other countries, they buy packs of cigarettes that have pictures of like blackened like lungs, like, you know, lung cancer and shit, you know, like people are,
and they're happy to buy
it. They're happy to buy it, man. So the consumer's going to do what the consumer's going to do. I just think that you have to be honest with them. And that's kind of a big part of the show, which is actually a good segue. I think it's important for us when we're doing this show is for us to keep in mind, like, this industry's comprised of a lot of activists, a lot of people who were entrepreneurs and activists and used those two skill sets to get to where we're at now, right? And I think because of this, a lot of us have pretty strongly held beliefs around this plant and this industry. So Kyle, if you wouldn't mind, I thought it would be good for our audience if we just kind of talked a little bit about our backgrounds, what brought us into this industry, and kind of our and why you're down for this project, why you're trying to you know, spread the awareness that we're talking about, and we'll just kind of go back and forth on that, and then we'll kind of lead into the proverbial bread and butter, you know?
Sure. Yeah. So I got out of college in 2012. I went to CMU, studied political science. Initially, my thought process was to try to get into city management or county administration, something at a municipal level of government. When I got out of college, I started out as an intern in the legislature, and then from there, went on to be a staffer for a couple of years. And during that time, had been a patient since 2009. But during that time, I had become friends with a guy named Jeff Hank, who was the executive director of the Michigan Legalize campaign. And I had some campaign background and experience organizing campaigns and doing voter ballot drives and stuff like that. And so they had come together for the first time, and then it was obviously denied at the court, at the state level. The petition the first time around wasn't considered valid, and it was ruled on a rule from way back in the 80s about the exact window of time that signatures can be collected, et cetera. Came back for round two, and I had decided to leave my full-time job to basically go hustle the Michigan Legalized petition for just literally a couple hundred bucks a week. And it wasn't really about the money, though. It was about trying to connect with the industry and to stabilize my roots in the industry, I guess you could say. And so We were able to get 365,000 signatures, thankfully, through a group effort of tons of people across the state. And once we got it onto the ballot, I decided to move back to my hometown in Ionia and to get with some local guys that I knew in the area, local caregivers from that area, and try to get our township and city to opt in. And that's kind of where I took the lead, because that's something that I kind of understood pretty well, as zoning and planning and things of that nature. And so I started to lobby my city and to lobby Easton Township, which is where we operate now. And just a long lobbying process. And throughout that time, just did everything I could to network with other caregivers and other people that were pursuing the opt-ins at different municipalities, and just trying to build a connection with different people in the industry.
For sure, man. That's fucking awesome. So like, that's a great story to hear, man. I also like, as obviously Kyle know, and all these people are about to know, cause I'm about to tell them, I was involved pretty heavily on the, MI Legalized campaign. And this is kind of the idea of what we were pushing for. Like in our head, we were like, oh, there's some person who, you know, is going to be able to move back to their hometown and open a grow in a store with their homies and make a sustainable business. You know, it's like, this is like 100% what we'd envision. So it's great to see it actually like playing out like that.
Thank you, man.
For sure.
Yeah. Appreciate that.
So yeah, a little bit about me. I also came into this from the political world. I grew up in Grand Rapids and my family was a pretty political family. My mom was like a longtime union steward, and she was involved in various nonprofits around migrant workers. It's different like advocacy issues around that. My dad was a former migrant worker, so we were pretty into the cause. And so I came up pretty politically conscious. I went to school for political science or international relations at James Madison in Michigan State. And when I was there, I got really, really, really political, and I started doing that for pay. I started working in 2008 for this guy named Ralph Nader. I ran his Michigan campaign and did his ballot access and learned about the whole petition gathering thing. And I did that for many years after that. I did a lot of stuff for the Green Party. I was the chairperson of the Green Party in Michigan for a little bit, and did a lot of ballot access work for Jill Stein when she ran for president. And I did the Don't Shoot Wolves campaign. And about that time I was living in East Lansing, and I bought a house in East Lansing on super favorable land contract terms from a really cool professor. And he was friends with this lawyer named Jeff Hank. And I started talking with Jeff, and it was right when the first MI Legalize started rolling up, and I got hired on as the treasurer and campaign manager. So that kind of got me really into the local industry. I'd been selling weed basically my whole adult life, just not in a store and shit. So I was kind of already like on the train for weed, you know. I was like, yeah, weed, this is great. So I just started doing that. And then me and my wife, both of us, kind of around the same time, just saw that this was the fucking future, right? This was like the opportunity for us to be in on the ground floor, something that we're super passionate about. And both of us kind of came up in that illegal drug culture around it before the new industry came in. So we were like, we were in, man, you know. So we quit our straight, well, I was worked in politics, so I never had no straight job, you know, but my wife quit her straight job and went and started working at Homegrown and Kind. And we kind of just did all the things, man, that we could. Same story as you, Kyle. We learned as much as we could. We networked and hustled and did the MI Legalized thing. And for anybody who doesn't know, it's like, it's people like Kyle and like a handful of other people like John Schlicker. I mean, I could go on and on, like
Nick Sattel,
Sam Perenick, yeah, like Jeff Hank, you know, people like that.
Colin McDougall.
Yeah, that pushed this so hard and did so much for not even like they did it for no money, like they financed it themselves many times to drive out and do this stuff. So this industry really was created by just like really, really hardworking, just dedicated people that are doing this like for just, I swear to God, out of the goodness of their fucking heart, just to have this plant be legal. And then to have this opportunity for all of us to come in and have this opportunity in this industry. So that's kind of that's the crux of the show also, I think, for if people don't know, like, that's the reason that we hate these chads so much, is this industry was created and fostered by people that are good people, that are doing this because they were sick and tired of seeing people go into jail for this shit. They were sick and tired of, like, having these live people's lives destroyed. And on the flip side, there's other people that, you know, that might not have been their biggest issue or biggest pull to this plant, but this was an opportunity for a lot of people to have the freedom to create a business and to do something entrepreneurial and to really mm-hmm. better themselves in their community, right? So there's a lot of shit, like, tied into this. And when we were, and I promise you, like, the Collins and John Schlickers of the world and shit, when they were getting these signatures and paying their own money to drive across Michigan and get signatures, if you were to ask them, like, hey, were you doing this so that Flourish and Live Well and High Life Farms could sell a $60 remediated eighth that they don't tell anyone about? Like, they'd be like, no, man, that's totally that's 100% not what anybody wanted, you know? So that's kind of, I think that's the, cause I get, you know, very enthusiastic, and I love the messages from people on Instagram, and they're like, yeah, fuck these chads. And I'm like, no, for sure. F these chads. But like the point of doing this is to highlight, like, what I consider the golden age of this industry, which is gone, you know, which is when it was 100% patient and caregiver owned and operated. And I think, like, we're trying to preserve part of that legacy, and also just preserve some of the spirit of that culture, you know? So I think that's
the kind spirit of the culture. I think you just nailed it on the head.
So I think that's what, in my opinion, when I envision Chad Watch, that's kind of how I see that, you know? So I don't know, Kyle, if you have thoughts on what.
No, I agree completely. It is about capturing that golden age, almost, if you will. It's not necessarily about just trying to bend people over and bash everybody per se, but, you know, if there's certain things that need to be talked about, I think, in the industry, and it's a good platform to bring everyone together and point some of that shit out.
For sure. So yeah, I'm really excited, man. So let's get into the meat of this show, because we're already, I can see that on this show, it's going to be, there's just so much to talk about. We could do this forever, right? So I sure. think the biggest, where to start, I guess, what is a chad? And so I guess, like, for this show, we're going to use that term. I actually pulled this definition from a hilarious Ganjapreneur article. And I'll drop this on the link tree that I have for Chad Watch on the Instagram, if you guys want to read it. But their definition is the type of person who may or may not have voted for legal cannabis, but they are trying to profit off of the legal industry. A chad will often be wearing a white collared shirt and attending all the major cannabis business conferences. Chads are an entity where bro meets cannabis poser, and is a common noun in the industry circles. So that's, like, their actually kind of harsh definition of what a chad is. But I think when we use chad, we use it as people who are not from this culture, man. They're not from this, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not people that have ever bought a bag of weed from
sure.
a parking lot somewhere, or, mm-hmm. you know, they're just not, it's just, if you don't understand what I'm saying, there's a very good likelihood that you're kind of chatty. You know what I mean? Like, like, so I think sure. that's kind of, that's who we're talking about. It's basically Johnny Come Lately is a lot of people who are coming into the industry, which, honestly, I don't necessarily have on the face of it, a problem with that. You know, like, I'm pretty mm-hmm. transparent. Like, I do a lot of consulting and things in the industry, and a lot of the people that hire me, they have to hire a consultant. So obviously they're not, like, the most slamming knowledgeable
sure. marijuana. They're people. Probably not from the caregiver system.
No, for sure. But they're, like, pretty right. generally pretty open about it. I feel like it's how I would be about any business. They're like, hey, man, sure. I don't know about this stuff. Like, obviously I want to find the people who have done the licensing or opened a store or, you know, done whatever to find out how to do it. Right. So I think mm-hmm. those people are not necessarily who we're talking about. We're talking about people who are coming in to this industry. They say, hey, I have this set of skill set or the set of experiences from another industry that made me very successful. Y'all are a bunch of dumb stoners. I'm going to run this like a real business. I don't want people caregiving. I don't want I don't want micro grows, any sort of like expansion to that system. And then you have the MCMA, like this group of proverbial people, like literally has a lobbying organization that exists. And so this is kind of the problem with the Chads is they have such a disproportionate amount of power because of the amount of money that they have, and the amount of money that they have makes it possible for them to hold on to all of these different parts of the industry that make it very difficult to kind of chip away at their power. Like, for example, and we're going to do a really in-depth episode about the real estate Chads and just about the how important the real estate game was to kind of the way that the stores are now and like the power structure of retail in the state. That was decided 2 or 3 years ago on some really, really wealthy real estate plays, real estate Chads that were doing a set of complicated plays or just like a different set of like, buying and selling and picking up different stores for market share. Like that's a really big part of it. And a lot of people are boxed out of the industry before they even get a chance because the real play was getting the real estate and the way that
properties under contract. Yeah.
And the way that all of this shit works, if anyone doesn't know about the world, is as you get more money, you get a way more baller network and favor circle. And so it's way easy for like some really highly capitalized individual to call their buddy from the country club and say, hey, man, I hear the city's opting in. Like, what's the deal? / I own a third of the town. Let's do it. So like, I think that's kind of and even if like they're not the actual Chad doing it, they tie it up and sell it to their Chad friends at Loom or Skyman or something,
Yeah, it is, and a lot of these cannabis companies, at the end of the day are essentially real estate companies, right? They seek to exist by obtaining municipal licenses and properties under contract from X amount of months ago that have been held on to until an ordinance is official or until MET becomes rec, et cetera. And then, you acquire a large enough portfolio where you put yourself in a position to be acquired. And then, things go up the ladder from there.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think that like, it's crazy is in Michigan, it's playing out like kind of fast, like we've already seen like the first wave of stores closing and stuff like that. But it's one of the things that I think that we'd like to highlight on this show is how like the direct relationship that money has with access, which I get it. I'm not dumb. Like this is capitalist America. And I think that it's going to be like that, in any industry. And I'm not even necessarily opposed to that all the time, or even in this instance, I just think that like it'd be one thing if they were just like rolling into a fair system, and then operating as good operators. But oftentimes these groups are doing the most, in my opinion, like morally disgusting things, not just to consumers with mitigation or with just subpar products in general, but like paying actual money to lobby against caregivers, to lobby for upping enforcement on people that are selling weed, man. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Or like coming out and having like an organized opposition to the micro business expansion. Like that's absolutely insane, and that's so against the nature of what I think the best parts of this industry were about. It's being, collaborative and having an open market and just letting the quality and the passion behind your product speak for itself, so these folks don't want to operate on a fair level. And I think a big part of it for everyone to understand is that for a lot of these operators in almost every other state but Michigan, they don't have to operate on a fair level. They've already they were there when the rules were written and they already bought the right people off. So like many of these folks, they're operating in states where there's like a handful of licensed operators. There's no competition.
Sure.
There's like, yeah. you know, like So they just, it's hard for them to, when they come to Michigan, to see what's going on. And I also think that's a hard thing for the Michigan consumer to really wrap their head around, is that most of these folks suck, you know, like they're placeholders. They're just there because in the other states, because they won the rich guy lottery, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I think you nailed it when you mentioned that these MSOs aren't used to a state like Michigan, where there is at least a slither of opportunity for other people to do the thing, you know, like in Florida, for example, there's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 producers statewide.
They're all pretty bad, man.
Trulieve has like 130 something stores or something ridiculous like that. And that's the only chain I can think of off the cuff that exists in Florida.
So Curaleaf is there and they're doing better because they're in more competitive markets in general, you know, like they have a handful here that actually compete, that do pretty, I mean, they seem more adaptable than the other MSOs, just in my opinion, just from observing it. Sure. But yeah, man, I agree. Like these operators are in a really weird subsect. In most places, they don't have to compete. The game is theirs. And I think that's a big part of why we're doing Chad Watch. We dropped a great article in the Instagram, and you guys can find it on the link tree. I forget the author, but it was from one of the marijuana weekly periodicals, online periodicals. And he talks about this like David Goliath kind of showdown between big operators and small operators. In fact, our friend Matt Abel from the Am I Legalized campaign and Am I Normal, he was quoted in it. He had some really nice, impactful, insightful things to say. And so this is kind of something that's happening like in a few other markets that in my opinion had more of a strong caregiver system and tradition of the legacy market. But this is something that's it's happening. Like we're seeing it out there in the marketplace right now with just the general cutthroat competition on pricing and stuff anyways. And so like it's a really real thing. And I think that our side, the former legacy people and the smaller operators, I think that more people agree with what we're saying. I think more people want transparency on mitigation. They want to support former legacy operators and small business and more grassroots people. And they want to support good practice. But if within a world with no information and access to people that are kind of like that are willing to put people on the spot, like that reality probably is going to be really difficult to get. And that makes the proverbial war with Big Chad, you know, like that makes it a tougher fight to win. So we just want to be like the propaganda wing, you know, of that battle, and push people to ask their providers of cannabis questions. Make sure like, hey, are you guys in the MCMA? Are you putting money into lobbying efforts to make things more difficult for caregivers, you know, like,
right.
Was this hit by a willow machine? Do you know what a willow machine is? Was it remediated in any other way? You know?
Mm-hmm. Now those are totally good questions to ask.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we want to have. Like every show has like a little bit of something we can, we can give you guys to at least have like a context on what's going on and what kind of questions you should be asking. and that's kind of the whole point of Chad Watch is to have really smart, knowledgeable consumers and industry members and have people that are pushing to get these actors to represent what me and many other people think have been the long held just social norms of our culture and industry around cannabis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
no. Totally. I think that, you know, this is a good opportunity to really hit everything that you just mentioned on the head and to bring informative guests that are really knowledgeable on specific, you know, weekly topics. So we're excited to get this going, man.
Yeah, no, for sure. I am too. So that's just a little bit of a little bit of setup on who we are and what the show is going to be about. A couple just quick announcements before we start to wrap up here. I will be releasing the brackets for March Chadness in a couple of days here. So please continue to send me your hilarious ideas for Chads to put on Chad Watch. I appreciate those all the time. Those are hilarious. And then I guess it's just a couple other things I will mention is let's look for a link, I think, in the next couple of days to download the show on Spotify. Thanks for everyone watching it live on Facebook. That is awesome. And we will be doing this again 2 weeks from now. We're going to be doing every other week for the initial couple months and just kind of see how it goes and kind of pick up experience and move from there. And yeah, so that's all I have on announcements. You have any final words, Kyle? Anything to say before we wrap it up?
No, not really, other than, you know, this has been, I think it's going to be a pretty cool opportunity, and we have a lot of good things to come. So
cool. Thank you everyone thank you Kyle for co-hosting the show with me, and thank you everyone for watching. I think in 2 weeks we're going to have an interesting episode about remediation technology, and what are some hallmarks of products that have been remediated, what you can kind of be looking out for as a consumer, and definitely some like verified good producers and people that that we would be suggesting you check out so that you don't run into that. So thank you everybody for watching. We really appreciate it, and have a nice day.